This mortal coil.
Well, in this mortal coil tonight, we're talking about one of the great thinkers and philosophers of history, Plato. Even if you don't know much about his ideas, you will have heard of his name. You probably recognise, you know, the word Platonic love, for example. But what were the most important ideas that he left us, and how do his ideas still influence our lives today? Dr. David Horan has spent the past 15 years translating the works of Plato into a new book called The Dialogues of Plato. He is Irish. He might be able to tell us about Irish pubs. But look, he'll be in Australia next weekend. He's going to be launching his book in Australia next Saturday, and then he will be giving a talk in Sydney next Sunday to talk about the influence that Plato has on all of us. And David joins me on Nightlife tonight. Hello, David. Welcome.
Hello. Very good to be with you.
Now, David, when I say you've been translating Plato, that's from the original Greek, right? I imagine that is a hell of a job.
It was a hell of a job because I was starting off with very little knowledge of ancient Greek, but a great interest in Plato, and that's what kept me going. The fire of the love of Plato kept me going. And the fact that I was now facing the very words that Plato spoke and that Socrates spoke was just another world for me. Just to know these are the very words that came out of Socrates' mouth, ancient Greek and strange and all as they were, just made me determined to get involved here, learn all I needed to learn, do all the work that I needed to do in order to make all of this happen and produce this translation, which was not my idea, by the way. Somebody else suggested it to me and gave me the financial support to proceed with it. So, yeah, it was strange. It was difficult. I was unprepared for it. I felt sort of quite inadequate. But none of that mattered. You just, the love of the philosophy takes over. The love of these words take over. And as I said, even if it's just a few words, the fact that you're using the very words that came out of Socrates' mouth just keeps you going and kept me going year after year after year for 15 years and made me learn all I needed to learn.
So, David, could you just give us a couple of lines of Plato in ancient Greek?
Oh, sure, yeah. Hoti men humezo andres athanoi pepanthate huponon hemon kategoron uk oida. How you, O Athenians, have been affected by the words of my accusers, I don't know. But I know that they almost made me forget myself, so persuasively did they speak. Wow. They're the opening words of Socrates at his trial, words of defiance. It's called the apology. He's not a bit apologetic, but they're the opening words of the apology. And I just think it's beautiful that we have those words and I can speak those words. And I apologize to the modern Greek speakers that my pronunciation is sort of westernized, but there it is. Do you want more? Or
we'll leave that for now, and we'll come back to Socrates a bit later as well. But what I'm wondering too, because I mean, others have translated Plato before. What is, when people do new translations of all sorts of older texts, what is the point of new translations? What is their purpose? Do they produce new meanings?
Well, they produce new meaning. The last person to do the complete works of Plato into English, all of the dialogues, was Benjamin Jowett about 150 years ago. So it hasn't been done since. Many, many scholars have done individual dialogues. I had no criticism of the other scholars. I had no criticism of Benjamin Jowett. But I was asked to take this on. Someone suggested I should do it. I couldn't turn it down. So I set about it. And what I decided I would try to bring was fidelity to the original Greek and comprehensibility. So the blend of those two, fidelity to the original Greek. So if you found a word in my translation, you should also be able to find it in Plato's Greek. And also it should be comprehensible. So that's what I tried to do. That was my effort, go for comprehensibility and fidelity to the original Greek. And, well, others can judge how I got on. I did my best. That was it.
Dr. David Horan is here. David's a Plato scholar from the Irish Centre for Platonic Studies. So I'm sure that, you know, we've all heard of Plato, but a lot of us might not really know that much about his life and how he came to be such a famous philosopher. So could you just give us a bit of a history of his early life, David, and explain how he came to be studying under Socrates in Athens?
Yeah, he met Socrates when he was quite young. Socrates was a very unusual character, challenged contemporary views and proceeded through question and answer. Hence, we get the phrase Socratic method. Didn't believe in telling people things, believed in engaging in dialogue and discourse through question and answer, from which conclusions might arise and light might be shone on things. Didn't write anything down, said he had nothing to teach, and yet Plato came under his influence as a disciple. So here we have the most influential philosopher in the West was directly a disciple of someone who knew nothing, insisted he knew nothing, and who wrote nothing. So nevertheless, that's what happened. Socrates was put to death in 399 BC. So that's 2,500 years ago.
Yeah, just remind us, David, of how and why that happened.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting story in itself. Look, the accusation was corrupting the young people and not believing in the gods of the state. They're the two accusations. Now, corrupting the young people, when you look at it, means he taught them to think, he taught them to challenge, he taught them to ask questions. And that was regarded as corruption, really. Similarly, not believing in the gods of the state, even challenge our views of the gods and our understanding of what the divine consists in, and not just accept standardized religious beliefs. So he was shaking the very foundations of Athenian thinking, and the rebellion against that led to his execution. They probably wanted him to leave town, but he wasn't going anywhere. So that's the way this worked. And Plato came under his influence. He didn't want the influence of this great man, Socrates, to be lost. So he began writing his dialogues, in which he presented Socrates appearing almost in plays, in dramatizations, centered on philosophy, the dramatization of reason, the challenge to existing ideas and beliefs, people's journey in reason into a new world, which you enter when you leave your old ideas and your old fixed thinking behind. That's the journey that Plato embarked upon after Socrates died, really to ensure a proper inheritance from Socrates, and that this great thinker would not be lost to the world.
Because I think Plato also had the option of a career in politics, but that was a kind of the pivotal moment in his life, was it, when Socrates died or was killed?
Very much so. He got disillusioned with Socrates when he saw what happened to Socrates. And he says famously, look, he cared about his city. He didn't want to turn his back on his city. He didn't want to turn his back on politics. So what he says was, until philosophers become kings, or the kings and princes of this world are somehow imbued with the spirit and power of philosophy, there will be no rest from their evils for cities or for the individuals in them. So philosopher kings is the literal version of it, but somehow or other, the spirit of philosophy has got to take over and rule. So he withdraws from direct involvement in philosophy, and he wants to inspire the philosophers of this world with the spirit, the politicians of this world with the spirit of philosophy. So that was his a decision, and it was absolutely, you're quite right, it was open to him to enter politics. He was a high-born Athenian in an age where that was a passport into power and into politics. So it's very dramatic stuff. The death of Socrates and his decision then not to enter directly into politics, but to influence political thinking through philosophy. And he does that to this day. People are still quoting Plato in the political arena, the five forms of government, the role of the tyrant. How does the tyrant arise? How does the tyrant come into power? What are the shortcomings of a democracy? What about the influence of wealthy people? How does all of that work?
And these are all very much questions that we are discussing today, aren't they?
Yeah, 100%. Mm. What's the ideal? What's the ideal? You mightn't reach it, but it's good to be clear what the ideal is. And for him, the ideal is philosophy should rule, the purest thinking should rule. The real understanding of what justice is should rule, not some shadowy notion of what justice is based on things we've picked up in our society and from our past.
Yeah. So does Plato have a clear idea that he passes on through his work about how we should define justice?
Yes, he does. Now, ultimately, it's inner. It's an inner ordering in which every part of you is doing what it should do. And within any of us, reason should rule. That's what's most important. There should be a spirited element to us which comes to the assistance of reason. And then the part of us that's full of desires and likes and dislikes and so on, let it be there, but it should be under the rule of reason and the spirited element. Similarly, in a city, reason should rule. Not our likes and dislikes, not the whims of the moment, but reason itself should rule. And there should be a spirited element, which, as you might say, puts up with no nonsense. That has a danger of becoming tyrannical, but something which puts up with no nonsense. So the voice of reason in politics, the voice of reason in our society, is what will take us in the right direction. And the whims of the moment, what we like, what we don't like, that can take us in the wrong direction. You need the voice of reason backed up by the spirited element, which takes no nonsense, really running things and controlling things. Then you can institutionalize this. And he talks about how you would institutionalize that in his final work, The Laws. So that's the way, that would be your ideal.
I'm just interested, David, with Socrates so omnipresent in Plato's work, how does Socratic thought differ from Platonic thought? What were the big differences between the two?
That is a tricky question. That is much discussed. I always say that Plato was a genuine follower, a genuine disciple of Socrates. He imbibed the spirit of Socrates. And at times he repeats what Socrates himself would have said. I opened there by speaking about his speech at his trial. At his speech at his trial, Socrates says to the Athenian jury, he doesn't plead them to let him off, doesn't please let me go. He says to the Athenians at his trial, value wisdom and truth more than money, reputation and honour. Value wisdom and truth more than money, reputation and honour. Now, Plato spends a lifetime unpacking, in my view, what exactly is meant by a person or a society valuing wisdom and truth more than money, reputation and honour. How would that work in terms of our institutions? How would that work in terms of our economy? How do you make that practical? And what challenges are there to it? Because some people will say, oh, yeah, sure, you value wisdom and truth more than money, reputation and honour, you'll end up with no money. You're going to lose out. That's a strong voice in society today, which says, no, you've got to value money, reputation and honour and cling to those, strive for those, put your emphasis there. Plato would say, no, don't put your emphasis there. And he explains why, and he answers those who would argue vociferously in favour of strong emphasis on money, reputation and honour. He gives voice to these people who say in Book One of the Republic, look, justice is for losers. Justice is for losers. You want to lose out, you want to be unsuccessful, live a just life. If you want to succeed, break the rules. Don't stand by justice. Justice is for losers. Plato takes on the responsibility of answering all those charges, all the counter-arguments to that beautiful plea by Socrates in his speech at his trial, value wisdom and truth more than money, reputation and honour. So Plato gives you the detail. Plato shows you how it works, and the spirit of it is in Socrates. That's the way I'd be comfortable to put it, just when you put me on the spot like that, because this is not a scripted interview, so I'm enjoying this more. So. Oh,
quite right. So, I mean, I guess, though, without Plato, would we have the kind of access to Socratic thought that we have today?
No, this is the whole point. This is the whole point. And I really am disappointed with people who say, I prefer Socrates to Plato. They like the spirit of Socrates, but they object to Plato being so detailed, and they might even say dogmatic, which I don't think is fair. We'd know nothing about the real spirit of Socrates if it wasn't for Plato. He went to so much trouble to really convey the true spirit of Socrates, which they then fall in love with. Of course you do. Who wouldn't fall in love with a man who's such a passionate love of wisdom and such a strong belief in wisdom and truth and such a very little interest, very, very little interest in money, reputation and honour? You know, so that's it. You're quite right. Without Plato, we've got nothing. The other alternative is Xenophon. Xenophon presents Socrates as a dull moralist. And the alternative after that is Aristophanes, who presents Socrates as a figure of fun. So, yeah, be grateful to Plato. Even if Socrates is your hero, be grateful to the man who gave you the picture of your hero. And that was Plato.
Dr. David Horan is with us in This Mortal Coil on Nightlife tonight. He's a Plato scholar from the Irish Centre for Platonic Studies, and he has translated the complete works of Plato. He is going to be in Australia next weekend giving a public lecture in Fox Valley in Warunga, 3 o'clock next Sunday at Mahrata, if you are interested and perhaps able to attend. Now, David, when Socrates was on trial in 399 BC, one of the things he said at that trial was that the unexamined life is not worth living, such a famous quote. To what extent was that idea adopted by Plato and is one of the big tenets of Platonic thought today?
Yeah. You're stealing all my lines. You're stealing all my lines here. Look, it's central to Plato, particularly if I come back to what's called the tripartite soul. I've just described it. An unexamined life is not worth living. Just look at yourself. Look at your own being on a day-to-day basis. To what extent am I guided by reason? Look back on a day. To what extent today have I been guided by reason? To what extent have sort of the passionate element overtaken? I just got overexcited. And to what extent have I just been ruled by desire? Just follow pleasure and avoid pain. Follow pleasure, avoid pain. Look at your own life, not other people's lives. That's not fair. Anyone can do that. We're all good at that. Don't point the finger at others. The unexamined life is not worth living. I'm really glad to have the opportunity to talk about it. It's central to Plato, who gives you a picture of the human soul. Freud, when he came to pretty well invent psychology and psychiatry, he owed a huge debt to Plato because of this beautiful, precise account of the nature of the human being and the way in which love operates within us, the eros, the passion, and how it can be problematic and how it can be lead us to the divine. This beautiful understanding of the human soul, which begins with Socrates' injunction, the unexamined life is not worth living, and is unpacked in detail by Plato, who shows you how a human being works and how that's reflected in a society. As in the small letters of the individual, so also in the large letters which are writ large in the society, in the world around us. What's going on in the world around us is just a manifestation of what's going on within the individuals. So that's all Plato, but it goes back to that statement by Socrates, that beautiful cryptic challenge, the unexamined life is not worth living. So glad to have the opportunity to talk about that. It's a fantastic injunction.
David, I've heard you say that we're in an age where we've lost the ability to think. Explain that a bit more and tell us how Plato can be an antidote to that.
Okay, well, look, I'll just digress for a second. Hannah Arendt, who was a Jewish woman, was at the trial of Adolf Eichmann in Jerusalem in 1960-61. And she looked at this Nazi war criminal, which Adolf Eichmann was, and she didn't see a raving monster. She was puzzled. And she looked at him all through the trial, and eventually she came to a conclusion. The problem with this man is not that he's possessed by some demon, it's that he's lost the ability to think. And Plato makes you think. Above all, I'd say, if you want to take a message from Plato, don't swallow the ideas as if they're dogma. Embark upon the journey of thinking and be guided by Plato as to how that journey might proceed. So that inability to think is very, very, very dangerous for society, as in the person of Adolf Eichmann, as seen by Hannah Arendt. There's a phrase in Yeats' poem, The Second Coming: the best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of a passionate intensity. And we don't want to be the best who lack all conviction, and we certainly don't want to be the worst who are filled with a passionate intensity, because without the thinking, you're an empty vessel. And if you're an unthinking, empty vessel, all sorts of ideas will pour in. And your protection against that is think rationally, think cogently, and immerse yourself in Plato so that your thinking is structured and guided by, I'd say, above all, a love of truth. Don't borrow ideas from Plato. That's just another empty vessel filled with Platonic thinking. Don't do it that way. Use Plato to think for yourself. Think for yourself. Otherwise, other people will do it for you. So I think this is crucial, this ability to think. And there's an article of mine, I've just been pointed out to me, it's in The Australian today. And I just was struck by the fact, what about AI? And I asked AI some of the questions you've just asked me. So I thought I'd try AI. Instead of me answering the questions, I'll ask AI and let AI answer the questions. So in this article in The Australian, I got AI's answer to some of the questions we're considering here and my own answer. And I say to the reader, okay, you figure out which is which. But the thing about AI is it lets you off the hook. It does the thinking for you.
Yeah.
I think that's the most dangerous aspect of AI. It does the thinking for you. What view should I have on the Russia-Ukraine conflict? AI will tell you. Saves you the thinking for yourself. And that's dangerous for the world. The most dangerous thing for the world is people don't think for themselves.
I notice your translation, David, is being made freely available online. Why is that the case? And how are you hoping that having it freely available will help spread the word of Plato today?
Okay, it's more a spirit. I was supported through that 15 years of translation by generous donors who just kept me going. I was working for an American multinational beforehand, and I had to stop that. So I had to live, and I was given support. The person who came to me and suggested doing this did so just spontaneously. So spontaneity and generosity have been the hallmarks of this project from the very, very start. At a certain stage, someone said to me, a friend of mine said to me, oh, listen, that thing you've set up and that project you're involved in, give me the bank account details, I'll send you a bit of dough. When we came to publish, the bit of dough that the person sent me was enough to cover 80% of the publication costs. It's all generosity and spontaneity. So my attitude was, let's continue in the spirit of spontaneity and generosity. And that, more than anything, is just true to the spirit of Plato. Plato never charged in his academy. Socrates never charged money to people who came to talk to him. So let's continue this spirit of spontaneity, generosity. It's there for all to read. Let everyone share in it. That's the true spirit of this project. So there it is. Make of it what you will.
David, thank you so much for joining us on Nightlife to talk to us about Plato. We look forward to seeing you in Australia next weekend.
I'm really looking forward to being there, and it's been great talking to you.
Dr. David Horan is a Plato scholar. He's from the Irish Centre for Platonic Studies. He has spent 15 years, as you heard, translating the complete works of Plato. He's doing a book launch in Australia next week. And there is a public lecture, which is going to be on 3 o'clock next Sunday. Mahratta.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.